are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Oh, I can tell that we're not now because it said in my ear, recording maybe I am an elder. Don't take advantage of me like that, Jason. Hey, welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. Before we start today, we're going to talk about some results that someone that's next to me, we're going to talk about that. Jason, I know I have said nothing to you about this, but the point is this, that I'll get into. We really don't understand sometimes how much results that we have gotten. Someone else can see it, but you, I know that you can't. You have no idea how, I mean, I think to some degree you know, but you can't really see how much you've transformed since the day you walked into the gym. It's pretty, I mean, amazing. You know, I don't know if you see that. I never could see it when I was competing. I saw it years later, actually, in photos. Even when I saw it in photos, like looking into a mirror, like you, I'm sure you're looking into a mirror, you've taken photos, and I'm sure that you have a perspective, but you really don't know how much of a transformation you've made. And what's really noticeable, that I notice from afar, is that it changes not only the way you look, but it changes the way you move your body now through space. Just walking around the gym, there's a level of confidence that you have now that you didn't have before. And again, I don't know if you really see that. I'm just pointing it out to you, you know, for you to really be aware of that, because it's been pretty amazing. One of the things that you could tell me here off camera, and I'll just keep relaying this on the show, because I think people need to know, you know, what is it? When you came to me, you were, how much overweight were you at that point? You're 270 pounds. How tall are you? 5'10", 270. And I would say, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but would you say you're pretty out of shape? Would you say that maybe that's one of the worst shapes that you've been in your life? Heaviest that you've ever been. Can you tell us why that happened? Was there any particular reason that happened? Did you just let yourself go? There was no...
I was eating whatever I wanted.
Yeah, nothing that was necessarily stressing you out in your life. If you take a look back, you know, like we all have stress that we're dealing with. Let's be real. Otherwise, it was just, you know, I think I can relate to you because I had been competing for many years at this point. This is way back. And I decided to give it up because my personal life was in the toilet at some point in my bodybuilding career. So I had to stop. I couldn't go forward anymore with the way things were going. But here's what happened to me. I protested working out. I was, you know, here's a guy that was working out all the time and training at the national level. And all of a sudden I find myself protesting. I'm not going to work out. I am not. Well, you know, as time goes on, it's like my body morphed into a fat fuck, you know, in about 8 months. It was just, I was fooling myself because I was on autopilot. And I just remember, like, I would look in like the mirror and I turned to the side and I go, oh, I'm not so bad. And I kept saying that till I was 80 pounds overweight. So that being said, what was the turning point for you? You got to 270. Why didn't you just keep going to 280 and 300?
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Oh, so you dodged the scale too.
So I had to go to the doctor.
Ah, at some point it catches up to you. You know, it's funny because I had a person one time and they weren't overweight. It was a female. She was so freaked out about stepping on the scale. I mean, I can make people step on a scale. It's not like life or death, right? She would not step on that scale, not facing forward. She did not want to see the number. She was that freaked out about it. So you had to come to grips with all of a sudden you were 270. Well, I mean, you were 270 the whole time, but you didn't know it. He had no idea.
I thought I was maybe 250.
We constantly lie to ourselves as human beings.
Solid
250. You mean like a skinny fat 250? Solid?
Yeah.
And then that was just, was it one day to the next? You went, that's enough? That's it. You know, we have to get to that point in our lives. Yeah.
Body was hurting. Heart. I'd be out of breath trying to tie my shoe.
Oh, yeah. I remember those days. I was up to like, I was a fat fuck at 280. And for me to bend over and tie my shoe, I had to take a breath first to go down or put my foot on top of something. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, that's enough. And for me, the moment of truth was when I walked outside. I was going to the restaurant to eat some more. And I walked outside and I walked by a window of a car. And it was such a brief moment. It was like, I looked over at that car window and I was like, who in the is that? Holy, it's me. That was it for me. You know, you never know what's gonna be that moment where you just finally meet up with that crossroad. And I think that's what I did. That's what you did. Okay, so walk us through that step. So you've had enough. Did you know immediately that you knew what you had to do, or what were the thoughts that were going on in your mind at that point then to take the next step?
Well, you reached out about doing this stuff.
Yeah, so I reached out because I needed somebody to work with me on some sound ideas and how to do this. Yeah.
Maybe this is the universe's way to
make
some changes that already been on my mind.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you did something that a lot of people have a hard time doing. Is not only, okay, it's one thing to say, I got to do something about it, but it's actually another thing to actually do something about that, to go walk through that door. I can tell you that over the years, and I've always told my trainers this, I said, make sure that you are mindful of the fact that you're used to being inside this gym. But when somebody walks in that's having maybe some body issues or that's a little bit insecure about how they feel and look, you have to be empathetic about that and realize that that's a huge step that you took. That's a huge step that you took, you know? Okay, so that's what I'm really getting to is letting our people know there's certain steps that you need to take along the way to make things happen for you. The first step is walking and getting inside that, in this case, in the gym. Okay, that's fine. But what did you do with your diet at that point?
It changed gradually.
Yeah.
Slowly, I knew if I was too intense, too quick, I would have would give up.
Yeah. And I think that's also very important for people to understand that what you're saying, okay, that you changed your diet gradually. It's a process is what you're really saying. Because if you do it too soon, you know, if you, the knee-jerk response is then all of a sudden you went from 0 to 100, that's not going to work either. And that's what most people do. And that's why they fail. I call it the shiny object syndrome. And it's counterintuitive. You got to keep pulling yourself back. Because I don't know about you, but there's a part of me that says, okay, when I was 80 pounds overweight, I wanted that to go away now. And yet that would have been the worst tactic for me to take or strategy for me to take. I think that's what you recognized.
Yeah, I had to fall in love with the idea of the process.
Yeah.
Instead of just seeing the results right away.
Yeah. And that's a really important thing to do. That's a real common thing. I get very frustrated because so many people, they fail and they start self-sabotaging themselves during the part of their, that process where they're actually starting to make results. And you, so far, how long have you been doing this now?
I think it's going to be coming up on a year.
A year. That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. And I tell you something, when you get to that point, you're at a point now where it'll be hard pressed for you to stop, in my mind, you know? And look, and the thing that you've actually shown is that you come in, is it 3 days a week, 4 days a week? You 3 days a week, but the key has been, you've been consistent from day one. The day that you decided to make that commitment to yourself, which is the most important thing, you have not. I've witnessed that, so I can verify that. You have been there, and guess what? You know, being consistent is half the battle. I had a client on my show one time that says, you know, you got to get to the point where you stop having an internal debate about whether you're going to go do this or not. And that's not that damn easy. There are some times that I'd rather do anything else but go to the gym. You name it, anything than to go to the gym, because I know that when I go there, I have to put myself in, I have to suffer to a degree. And we all have to suffer. It doesn't matter if you're just doing this for fitness or endurance or bodybuilding. It's, you suffer a little bit every time you go in. But boy, I tell you what, it sure does feel good after you get out of the workout, doesn't it? You get that runner's high, those endorphins start kicking in. That's what makes it worth it. And I'm at a point now where I have some training partners that I work with in the morning at the gym. And after the workout, because we beat ourselves up, you know, I'm at that, still that mindset of a bodybuilder, and I go in and try to kill myself or get to the very edge of that. And I always tell one of the partners, I said, you know what I can't wait for is tomorrow. I can't wait to do this again. That's sick. Anyway, let's talk about a couple things that are, thanks for joining in. I know I did it on purpose. I didn't want you to be ready. So anyway, thanks for coming on. I think it's important stuff. And that's the main reason I wanted you to come on and talk about this, is because I would say that you're that average person that wanted to go in and just change their, you know, the way they looked and felt, and you did it, and you did it remarkably. So congratulations to you. 70 pounds lost, baby. Damn. Okay. Let's talk about a couple things here that are probably a little bit controversial. I've been in that arena for a long time, and I don't know. I've tried to get out of it. I've tried not to be controversial. It's impossible. I'm going to stop fighting it. But what I'm going to tell you is not just controversial, and I just don't say that to be controversial, because some people do. It's based on physiological fact that you should train when you're sore and that you should train when you're injured. Yes, train when you're injured. I've gotten a lot of heat from this, especially training when you're injured. Now, look, I understand if you pull a muscle or a tendon off the bone, all right, you can't train that particular muscle group. I got that. But there's this thing called cross training, and it's not the CrossFit training that you hear about. It's cross training where you start training the other body part. Like if you pull a right tricep or a right bicep or a chest pec, whatever the case may be, I'm not suggesting necessarily that you train that body part. That's just that you just pulled off the bone, you know, because you can't do that anyway. There's a little bit of healing time there, but you can train the opposite side of the body, because by doing that, it recruits red blood cells and oxygen, which are natural healers. So in that sense, you don't have to stop training. And yet so many people do. There's nothing wrong if you take that approach where you don't want to train. But if you're trying to minimize any downtime, because we're bound to get hurt as you know, when we're exercising like that, or if you're an athlete, whatever the case may be, it's really not a question of if you're going to get hurt. It's a question of of when you're going to get hurt. So you have to learn how to deal with stuff like that. And so, and then otherwise, you know, if you have tweaked a body part or something like that, because there's various levels of injury to where you can still train the body part. I had a situation, I was about 2 weeks out from a competition and I popped a hamstring. I did some deadlifts and I should not have done that. I did deadlifts and I heard a pop and my hamstring turned blue, black in a couple of days. But it was one of those things where I could still train it. And that's where you start implementing a tactic called active recovery training. And again, this is not, I want to emphasize that this is not when you have a muscle or a tendon that you've pulled off the bone. But now we know how to address that by training the opposite side of the body to recruit blood and oxygen to naturally heal that. Okay. But active recovery basically is just training the body part while it's being injured, train it with lightweight training and only train it with as much resistance that you can possibly handle. At that point, when you're active training, in active training recovery, you're not really trying to push it like you are a regular set where you're, pushing it to where you only have, no reps that are left, or you have still a couple reps left in the tank. You don't go there. It's very lightweight training. I would say keep your repetitions at 20 to 25, maybe even 30. But it's the same. It's the same effect that you'll get from training the opposite side of the body when a muscle has been pulled off the bone. It recruits, the same idea happens. It recruits red blood cells and oxygen, and it, believe me, you'll keep you in the game. You'll get back and be back at full speed a hell of a lot quicker than if you just totally shut down. So keep that in mind. And forget training with, as far as when you're sore, that's a, that's a myth that you should wait till you're not sore. All that soreness is your body, it's adapting to, it's a buildup of acids in your body from the training that you're doing. Your body gets a buildup, it's responding to that, and it causes soreness. But, soreness is not even a good indicator of a good workout. It's just that your body is maybe not used to that particular, the way you were training that body part. It could be that you've changed up on the exercises that you're using, or your repetition sequence changed. Your body's very sensitive to stuff like that. And it creates a situation where your body gets sore, but it's not an indicator of whether or not you've gotten a good workout. So you should train the body part the next day. It's just a little bit of lactic acid that's been building up, and you can actually flush that out. If you did a little light walk, you can do a light walk after the workout that you just did. You could walk afterwards. You could do a light 15-minute walk. That'll help flush out the lactic acid while your body is learning how to adapt to a new environment. Every time it's trying to adapt to a new environment, you'll get sore. And for those of you that have been around long enough, you know that you keep, because your body needs repetition. So at some point, very quickly, your body will adapt to that and you won't get sore anymore. Then you might think that you're not getting a good workout because you're not sore. So keep that in mind. Soreness, you need to train when you're sore. You need to train when you're injured. And you might, I've had some people tell me before, well, what about like people who have a herniated disc? Well, a lot of times with a herniated disc, through proper training, in other words, toning your training down, you can actually minimize that herniation in the disc. You don't necessarily have to have a surgery. Excuse me. Keep that in mind. Okay, next. Let's see what I got here. Can't see Sugarland anymore. Yeah, we talked about that, body being sore. What is this one here? Okay. Your body must become its function. Think about that. It's a physiological fact. Your body must become its function. So the question that you should be asking yourself, because it's very important in your overall stated goal, is what are you teaching it to do? Your body's only going to respond to what you teach it to do. It has to become its function. It's part of your autonomic nervous system. It's part of the fight or flight. It's supposed to do that. So I've also said before, which I've taken some heat for, is that warming up is a waste of energy for the very reason that I'm talking about right now. Because you're, unless you have a, okay, maybe if you have a pull muscle, we talked about this now with training sore, you use active recovery. Okay, there's always an exception to the rule or a way around what I'm saying. Nothing is necessarily black and white. It's gray a lot of times. But aside from that, the body becomes its function. So with that being said, if you're teaching your body that you need to warm up, that you need to do some warm-up sets before you get into the working set, why is that something that you should be doing? When on the flip side of that, you could teach your body to be ready immediately. And it's a physiological fact. You do not need to warm up. It is a waste of energy. So keep that in mind. And again, I'm not telling you to be reckless. If you, in fact, have gotten hurt, well, then obviously you need to address that with the active recovery training. Teach your body what you want it to do, because it will respond to that. Man, I can't see stuff anymore. Muscle is not built on science. It's built on firsthand experience, like a lot of everything is. It's based on true knowledge is through firsthand experience. I'm not saying that the science isn't important. It's very important. But it has its place as far as I'm concerned. What's most important is that you ask why you're doing something, and then create a situation that you have a stated goal. This is one of the things that Bulgarians did that was, I thought, pretty cool. And by the way, I had first-hand experience with that too. I had a bird's eye view of all the stuff that I'm talking about with the Bulgarians. They decided to not let science get in the way of application. And what they did is they said, okay, what's your stated goal? What was their stated goal? Well, it was to create the strongest athletes in the world. And they said, okay, we're going to do that with this weight training equipment. And they said, okay, we're going to try all these exercises to see, because obviously they were training for Olympic lifting, so they had certain moves that they had to get strong on, basically explosive power to add strength immediately. And so that's what they did. And they didn't let science, or they didn't let that get in the way of the application. And the same thing applies to when you're creating a nutrition program. Do it from firsthand experience, because you'll more time than not, you'll be disappointed when you let science lead your way. You know, we're all physiological beings, but the way that we respond to macros, the way, you know, some people do better on a high fat, high protein diet. Some people do better on low carbohydrate diets. I mean, there's all new kinds of nuances within the high fat diet. Like for example, when we wrote the anabolic diet with Mauro Di Pasquale, we basically came up with what we call the 52 diet. And that was that you got to carb cycle 2 days out of that seven. And you don't know that and how that works until you actually put yourself through that. You can read about it and it sounds good. In fact, you know, a lot of the stuff that we did was actually counterintuitive to a lot of people. For example, when we said that saturated fats were not the culprit, when I was over there, I asked the Bulgarians, I learned so much from them. I was in two other countries, but the Bulgarians had they were the most insightful. And I told them, I said, how do you feed your athletes to, because you got to back up the training with some diet, obviously. And so what do you feed your athletes? They said, we feed them a high fat diet. And I was struck by that, because coming from the West, you know, we're at that time, it was about, you know, eating healthy and eating clean. And I told him that, and I said, well, you know, from where I come from, that's it's regarded by eating saturated fats, it's regarded to creating and being a part of overall health problems that you'll have. And their response to that was, we don't care. And I was very struck by that. But at the same time, I really understood that the reason why they said that was that they were, you know, they knew what the stated goal was. It was to develop the strongest athletes in the world. And how do you do that? They didn't do that. They tried it. They didn't do that by feeding them a low fat diet and high carbohydrate, a healthy type of diet. What would be considered to be a healthy type of diet. See, that's what I'm saying. It's sometimes your state of goal will conflict with other things, like this, as I'm talking about with the high fat. It turns out, and Mauro DiPasquale pointed this out, eating saturated fats is not the culprit. It's not what's going to cause you health problems. And that goes against a lot of, it's counter intuitive to a lot of information that might be out there. I mean, when we were coming up, it was late 80s, early 90s when the RDA came up and they decided to change the profile of, you know, how on the macros, how much fat you should have in your diet versus carbohydrate versus protein. They changed that dynamic. Well, guess what? They lowered the fat intake. I think it went down to, 15-20%. I don't know the exact number. It just went lower. Eating lower fat, in other words, was supposed to be healthier for you. This is going to make the point to the Bulgarians why I'm talking about this. So what happened was, people did cut their, you know, we cut the fat out of the diet, but what they replaced it with was carbohydrates. Now, you would think that carbohydrates are healthy, and they are to an extent. But here's what was going on physiologically. When we increased our carbohydrate intake, your body can only store so much carbohydrate in its storages. It has a carbohydrate storage. It uses some of the energy that you're eating. It burns that. But then if you have too many carbohydrates in your system, you get what's known as high blood sugar. And that's unhealthy in itself. So what the body does to respond to that, it stores the carbohydrate over as a triglyceride. And a triglyceride is not necessarily unhealthy until it gets above a number. And we've talked about this before. And when it gets above 500, then it becomes a problem. But the point that I'm making is that it's not the saturated fats that's causing that problem. It's actually too many carbohydrates that you're taking in. So on one hand, you're thinking, oh God, I'm eating healthy, but you're not getting the result that you think that you should. And this is the reason why. Consequently, what happened in our society back then is more people got obese during those times when they were eating a low fat diet. Again, it sounds good and it sounded good on paper, but in reality and in the real world, in the way that your physiology works and operates, it got a really bad effect. You know, cholesterol, they were saying, well, saturated fats are cholesterol. Well, here's a little fun fact. You know, if you cut out all the cholesterol out of your diet, thinking that, well, if it's cholesterol is the problem, I'll cut it out of my diet, I should be healthy. Well, what happens in that scenario is that your body produces its own cholesterol. You need cholesterol and fat in your body for joint lubrication, to keep you warm. There's various things that role that fat plays. The problem is the cholesterol that your body produces, it's harmful to you compared to the saturated fat. And, you know, it's too bad but during those days, you know, the egg industry got hammered. And, you know, of course they know now that I don't think they're willing to admit really that that they're wrong about that, the RDA. But boy, the beef industry and eggs. And the crazy thing about the eggs is that and even with the red meat, is that eggs are like a perfect food because the white part of the egg is lecithin and it emulsifies the yolk. So, I mean, it's a perfect food. And there's a percentage in the red meat that's like the white meat. It's got a certain, it's not all saturated fat. I'm trying to come up with the name of that. The white, oh, anyway, saturated fat was not the issue is what I'm trying to make of a point here. What else do I have here? Multitasking, counterproductive. In theory, you would think, hey, I am going to be more efficient by doing more than one thing. You see it all the time. I mean, not only as it relates to nutrition or training, when you're trying to do more than one thing at a time, then your body is fantastic because it's always going to adapt to its environment. You're teaching it to adapt to its environment. But what you're also doing is you're teaching it to compromise the environment that you're teaching it to adapt to. You have to understand that. And if you're okay with that, if you're trying to do two different things at one time, I know just like with people like at work, you know, they start multitasking. And what ends up happening is they start compromising everything that they're doing. So you have to be mindful of that when you're, as it relates to your exercise and with your nutrition, is that you're always going to do a better job when you can focus more on one thing. And I understand that you have to be able to do more than one thing. I got that. And you can do that. It's just that you can't possibly think that if you put equal amount of energy into doing two different things, that you're going to reach your potential. You won't do that. It's just not, it's physiologically, it's not possible. I think the last thing that I'll cover here is as it relates to training. Physiologically speaking, it's impossible to overtrain your physiology in 30 to 45 minutes. It's about recovery. And there's no such thing, I'll leave you with this, there's no such thing as overtraining if you don't overtrain the body to begin with. What does that mean? Well, if you stay within that 30 to 45 minute mark, and I can tell you that from personal experiences, I know that you can bump that up to about 55 minutes, but you got to be careful with that. For those of you who do that, you have to have an awareness as to what your body is saying and intuitively what your body is really saying. But to be safe, if you kept it at 30 to 45 minutes, which for those of you who are out there who bought Bulgarian Burst and Serious Growth Training, Big Beyond Belief, Titan Training, we always, that was one of the staples, was to keep your workouts 30 to 45 minutes. I mean, the Bulgarians were training five times a day, for goodness sake, doing the same lift. Because what they also knew, you can't overtrain the system in that amount of time. And 30 to 45 minutes, your muscle and your physiology, there is a certain amount of recovery, but it's not to the point where you're chronically, there's a difference when you have, let's call it healthy recovery versus chronic recovery. Your body can totally recover within five hours. And that's what the Bulgarians were doing. They just cut their training sessions down to like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And they were just focused on maybe just one body part. Look, I know some of this is not practical necessarily. When we wrote our first Bulgarian Burst, we came out and had people you talk about taking a major stance against the popular belief back in the late 80s. You know, I realize now that we really took a damn bold stance. Our first training course, Bulgarian Burst, we asked our people, and we just didn't ask them. We told them why they should be doing this, because it was all about being the most efficient that you could be. We just didn't have people asking them to train three times a day just for the hell of it, to be different. It was different. It was drastically different from what people and how they were training back in those days. But here's the truth. Here's what we stood our ground on. We said, if somebody really wants to do this, if they really want to do this, and you don't want to think about that, it applies everywhere. If you really want to do something, you'll figure out how to do it. If you really want to be the most efficient that you can be, then you want to make sure that you train your physiology more often than not. And it's really hard. It's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. And I do understand for those of you who work, because when we did the Bulgarian burst, it was like, oh shit, I got to work. Well, you know what? At your lunch, instead of eating your lunch at lunch, train. How about that? Because you know what? That's the kind of commitment that you have to start making when you want to make this a lifestyle for yourself. And if you want to keep making improvements, I know that because I'm not at a place now where I'm older. I'm 67 years of age. Hell, I've got, you know, just the fact that I'm 67 years of age changes the whole dynamic of still wanting to put on muscle, still being competitive, at least with myself. But you'd have to do what you have to do, right? I mean, we hear this all the time. You have to have perfect willingness. You have to be willing to take that next step and say, you know what, this is an inconvenience, but my excuse isn't going to be bigger than the result that I want to get. It's just not going to be that. And that's just an internal debate that I just don't have anymore. It's easier for me only because of the repetition, because my body has become its function. My body, meaning my physical body and my emotional state. It's taken a long time to do that. It doesn't matter. Whatever it takes. Perfect willingness. Motivation will leave, but discipline will always be there. And that's what you have to make sure that you work on every single day. And I'm happy to tell you guys, I've told you on this show before, I am so amazed and so surprised the kind of results that I'm able to get at this age. That is just, I mean, I was inspired by Robbie Robinson. I've talked about him before. And you know what? It's in the mind. And you just have to make sure you take all the steps that you need to take to make your body function like it did when it was younger. It can be done. Until next time, train when you're sore, train when you're injured, use active recovery, be mindful of what I'm saying. Don't be reckless. I'm not saying for you to do that. Never stop training. Never, ever stop training. Go get Serious Growth.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.